welcome into This Has to Work. I'm Matt Hoddle, and joining me today, Mike Goodrich, principal at First Avenue Ventures. Mike, thanks so much for being here.
Greetings and salutations. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So Mike is going to talk to us today a little bit about impact investing or social impact investing. It's something that, frankly, I only understand very little about. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what it is, what the opportunities look like, et cetera. But one of the things that that stuck out to me was, before we even get into what it is, was there's $502 billion in impact investing assets worldwide, which was, you know, I mean, it's a drop in the bucket compared to maybe traditional investment theses around VC and private equity. But that's a lot bigger number than I expected.
It's a real phenomenon. It's not a flash in the pants. It's the younger generation is driving a lot of this. I expect it to be something that it will be challenging us for the next 20 or 30 years.
So let's start from the beginning. What is, in your definition, social impact or impact investing?
So the definitions are all over the map. And I don't necessarily have one, and I've heard one, and it's very difficult to put it in a box. And it, as soon as you put it in a box, it gets out. What you're talking about is you're trying to do social good through investing. And there are a lot of different ways to look at it. In reality, they all kind of come back to the same place. Hey, we want to make the world a better place through the capital and business models that we know. But it is very hard to get your head around the definitions. I've heard, you know, you're just trying to be good is to some degree social impact investing. Okay, I'm not going to go invest in tobacco stocks because that seems to be killing a lot of people. You know, to, okay, I want to do an investment that is only in affordable housing. So you've got a huge range of investments that qualify. The definitions that I've heard that I think you can get a lot of traction around are, okay, impact investing has both a financial return and a measurable impact. So if you're building charter schools with an impact investing fund, how many charter schools and how many students? That's a measurable impact that you're having. The one that I probably favor more is the application of business principles to societal problems.
So let me ask the one I think that comes up, or the question that comes up a lot for people who don't spend a ton of time understanding or contemplating impact investing or actually, you know, participating in impact investing. Is it a myth that social impact investing will almost always produce below market returns?
I don't think it's I don't think that's right. The evidence, you know, with a lot of this stuff is very difficult to flesh out, and you can argue the coin either which way. And some people will say, well, we don't care if we get a market investment if we're doing the societal problem. I believe you can get a market investment with a caveat that if you're doing it actively, it costs money. And you have to have some of the same sort of entrepreneurial business principles that you have in place already. And so that takes time. So I don't know how time is money. That may mean it's not a market rate. But you know, there's a fund out there that is run by a well-known Dimension Fund, which is a well-known market fund, and it just covers the market. They simply take stocks out of their fund that have a good deal of carbon in them. They proportionally take it out. And it, you know, sometimes because that's heavy energy stocks, it overweights the market. Sometimes it underweight rates the markets, but you're essentially getting a market rate return.
So that goes to my kind of my follow-up question, which is the ways that these investors are balancing kind of the intended social impact with the investment return, I think is, you know, unique to that fund, unique to that management team, unique to the thesis that it has. I know Citibank just announced like $102 million, I think, or
there was one from BlackRock they have started focusing on, hey, we are no longer investing in things that do not take climate change seriously. Yes,
that feels a little bit like social impact light. So in other words, I'm not going to do poorly. I'm not going to do bad things, or I'm not going to invest things that are contributing to societal ills, but I may not be investing in things that are cleaning it up.
Well, I think that's there's certainly an active versus a passive component to it. You know, I am going to exclude these sets of stocks, and that's certainly a lot easier to do than managing just for that. And there's, by the way, though, that flows a lot of funds into it. Millennials are more likely to invest in those the passive type funds than they are through their 401k, just in a balanced thing. But I mean, a multitude. But yes, I do think there's also a component of, hey, how can we solve it? But you were talking about funds and stuff like that. There's a article in today's Crunchbase that has 20. One of the strongest areas of startup funding is recycling packaging waste. Apparently, 20 startups have been funded in this area. So it is, you know, there are many different ways to come at it, all kind of coming at the same place, although not without every flavor. You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So
sure. Well, in the report I read, they talked about kind of the largest class of investors or within the impact investing space are still individuals. But then you see this thing, you know, you see BlackRock, you see Citigroup, you see other, you know, kind of entities that are now forming, you know, large funds around this. Is it just a matter of time that flips where you see the largest investor class being funds and then individuals, kind of like you see in what I would consider more traditional PE?
Yeah, I think when you start looking at the ultimate LPs in the investing world, the college funds, the university funds, they're going to start getting a larger amount of pressure from their constituencies to have clean tech or clean energy, or, you know, just not screw things up any more than they're screwed up. And that, of course, is an interesting debate for professors to have. It is being driven often by family offices, where you have people saying, "Okay, I've got wealth. How can I not screw things up any more than they already screwed up? Or maybe I could actually be a positive to society."
Right. So let's put on the kind of the hat of the investor. And just like any investor, you're going to go through some sort of due diligence process. Is it different to do that within an impact investment? So for example, I would assume, you know, some of the things that just aren't going to be there that would be there. And let's say, for example, a technology investment, which is there's an established market out there. There are previous exits. There are other companies. There are executives out there. There's a lot of data. But a lot of these impact investing opportunities, they're trying to do something that hasn't been done before or hasn't been done in this particular novel way. That's got to impact kind of the due diligence and the review process. How does that feel different?
But yeah, well, no, that doesn't feel different at all. When you're evaluating any VC deal, any startup deal, you know, you're not investing in something that's already been done. You know, you want to see a niche in the market. You want to see, and then take a step back and say, well, what companies are usually better? Well, mission-driven companies. And okay, maybe, I mean, there's still a lot of companies that their mission is to make money. But that doesn't build culture very well in this day and age. That doesn't, you know, let's go make some owners and VCs money. How far are you going to get on that? So, you know, these mission-driven companies are often the ones that rise to the top.
So, but let's talk about something very specific. You're right. So if you're looking at a technology investment, you know, they may be doing something disruptive in the field, but I guess the argument I'm making is there is a larger macro market that at least provides some bracketed context around that differentiation or around that disruption, which is kind of the way you know it's disruption, right? Or it's right. Differentiated. But when you start getting into things like this, let's just, you know, extrapolate to the end, which is, you know, by the time somebody's doing a growth investment, so let's not talk about early stage, but once, you know, let's say these companies get these early stage investments from Citigroup, BlackRock, whatever the case may be. Now it comes time for an A round or a B round, and they need $20 million to take the next step. That's usually when investors start going, okay, what is the end game here, right? Is this thing going to be a publicly traded stock? Is this going to be you know, acquired by somebody else? Because a lot of their equity is not liquid and wouldn't be liquid for a really long period of time. Is that just the idea that this is more the hold forever and hope at some point in time it becomes profitable? How do we make that part of the thought process not feel philanthropic and feel like it's actually something of which a, you know, capital is returned, capital is gained, capital is returned, and then presumably reinvested in the next thing?
Well, so if you, again, if you assume and believe that you get a market rate return, then you have an exit depending on the size of the business. So two examples, you have a bakery. There's one in New York that is open hire. So you show up and you, if there's a place for you, you start working and they don't look at your record. They don't look at, they don't look at any qualifications. You get basic training, entry level, and go. Perfect to get felons back into the workforce, get people that have been served their time, served society's time, messed up, get them back. So, you know, is there growth outside of that particular bakery? No. Now they have a chance and they are looking at doing other bakeries, but is that a venture capital exit? No. So what is, you know, that is what it is. On the other hand, you know, if you have a machine that takes plastic and you know you have single use plastic out there and turns that that plastic into energy or oil, shoot, that's a huge, huge market. You've got the Chinese who have said, hey, we don't want your single use plastic anymore, and we don't take your plastic recyclables. That's a $1 billion plus problem, and that you could get an exit, you could go public on and go from there. So yes, now there are nuances, but
yeah. So just to play devil's advocate, so that somebody comes to an impact investor and says, I want to create these, seaward going drones that clean up plastics from the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's really hard to start understanding, like, who is a potential acquirer of that business at some point in time that creates a liquidity event for investors that then returns capital that can either be reinvested or whatever the case. You get what I'm saying? The traditional kind of cycle.
But it's still the, it's still the same fundamental economics. When you're talking about impact investing, you're not talking about removing it from fundamental economics. So you spend a dollar, you invest a dollar, you get $10 on return. And that's, can they exit publicly or stuff like that? It's still the cash economics. And that's one component. And then the other component is, well, is it actually doing something societally worth good? And maybe the better way to look at it is like, okay, if you've got $1 and you spend it with as much risk to get $10 worth of reward, if that's your compensation for the risk, aren't you going to feel better having that in actually something that's doing good?
Yeah. But then it also, I'll play the other side of the coin, which is, so let's say we take this company that wants to clean up plastics from the ocean, and now we create a joint venture with the recycler that can turn it into petroleum products. And now all of a sudden you have a complete business model end to end that is positively impacting the environment and also potentially producing market returns, revenue, all the things that basically add value back into the company.
Yeah. Tesla, when they started as an impact investing. That's a very controversial stock. But ultimately you have a lot more electric cars on the road today because of Tesla.
No, that's fair.
Love them or like them.
Yeah, that's fair.
Are we going to start smoking pot during this thing too?
No.
Okay.
So we'll keep it, G, G rated for all of our listeners out there that are under the age of 18, which I don't think there actually are any, but let's play the game. So you've alluded to this and you've kind of talked about it, some that I think intuitively we understand as being important, but what are the specific issues you see that are investors in the impact space or interested in impact investing are really excited about? You mentioned, carbon offsets. You mentioned obviously plastics, reduction of plastics. You've talked about empowering workforces. What are the things that are really coming to mind that you're seeing out there?
So, let's talk first globally, because I think it's really exciting when you get the mindset is like, okay, can we do good? How can we do good? Let's think about this intentionally. How can we alleviate some of the problems of society? You know, so concepts for open hire to rehabilitate workforces. charter school development, harnessing private forces to educate and give kids a choice, affordable housing, opportunity zones. All of these are, you know, a lot of plays in the environmental section. Diversity and inclusion. How can we make it a more inclusive economy? Certainly a very, if the rich get richer and the richer are predominantly look like white like us, that's not good for society. So how can we make it a more inclusive economy? Solving these problems through the economic forces is tremendously exciting, at least to me. Not to say there's not problems, but it's exciting.
And I think that's a good point on a number of levels. One of the things that I am guilty of is I may not think of impact investing in the broader sense of the word. So in essence, it's not just about a bunch of people going around and, you know, funding a, you know, forest cleanup, right?
Yeah.
That's maybe too elemental, but you talked about it. And so, you know, diversity, inclusion, opportunity zone investing, all of those things very legitimately are impact investing, but I don't know that we're all not guilty of forgetting that that is a form of impact investing that I think a lot of, for lack of a better term, traditional investors are already investing in.
Yeah, no, I think that's, and maybe put some metrics around it, maybe put a little bit more intentionality on it. How is your workforce really reflective of society generally? But Bitcoin, how can that help people in developing countries with unstable currencies? You can debate whether Bitcoin is a pyramid scheme or not.
Possibly, but I mean, the other part of it too is it can solve the unbankable problem for, you know, the
unbankable.
I mean, it's like 70 plus percent of the world is not traditionally bankable, which means they have no way to access their cash, or they have no way to store or invest or do anything else with their cash. And to your point, love it or hate it with Bitcoin or any digital currency for that matter, that is an equalizer for those folks that now have access to a way to store and transfer and control their actual, you know, wealth.
Yeah. So it is food deserts. And UAB is doing next weekend a hackathon on how do we solve food deserts and food waste and making the industrial food process more efficient. That is right in the wheelhouse. So it is broader, and maybe it's just saying don't be a jerk when you invest. I think you can take another step and say that may be the light area of it. Take another step and say, well, how am I actually impacting it? How am I actually moving forward? And from a philanthropic point of view, if you want to give $100 away, isn't it better if you can get that $100 back and give it away again? Then that's the other side of another side of the coin to this.
And I also think too that impact investing may I think lends itself to a wider amount of cooperation from kind of a standpoint of traditional investing. You know, you have companies that are getting funded, you have investors with funding that invest in those companies. It's kind of a very small population of participants. But with an impact investing, there are so many other things that tie into the community engagement, that tie into opportunity discovery, because unlike traditional venture capital or traditional, you know, technology investing or whatever the case may be, those deals tend to find the investors. The investors tend to find those deals. To me, there's a little bit more discovery that's probably needing to take place so that we're not missing opportunities. To that point, and to the idea that more people can participate in this than just the investors and the companies that are trying to find the funding, people want to get involved. People want to somehow learn more, or get involved, or be part of the solution. How would they get started if they're not a founder, they're not an investor, but they just want to get involved and understand more?
Well, I think there's one is intentionality around your money, around your own personal finances, which is hard and difficult and out there. But Birmingham has a tremendous opportunity because it is an incredibly generous company, a generous city. It has, but it has also been a laggard in this area because there's such a mentality of we're going to make all our money and then we're going to give it all away. And it doesn't have to be that it doesn't have to be that binary. You can make money and do good as you go along. So if you start thinking about it that way. For me, and I was fortunate to do this. There is a conference in San Francisco, the SOCAP conference. That's a yearly event. It was very disappointing when I went out there, and I know other people have gone out there, but there was only one other person from Alabama that I could find. That person was from Mobile. So it is a wide open space in Alabama. Now, there are organizations. Community Foundation is looking at this. Alabama Power is looking at this. Family Foundations are looking at this. People are beginning to think about this more. But when I went to that conference, and anybody that knows me knows that I can be all over the map, and I am a generalist to a fault. But this, there was so many different seminars, so many of the breakout sessions. There are so many different paths to go down, and it tied it all together for me personally, which was tremendous. So if you, that organization and some of the stuff that comes out from there is good.
So a couple of takeaways for me. First, generally speaking, impact investors are not looking at this like philanthropy. They're looking at this as an investment that they, in mostly traditional terms, with the caveat that on top of the fact that I want market returns, right, I also want it to have a social impact that I'm proud of, social impact that I think is needed and meaningful. Social impact investing or impact investing probably is a broader set of investments than maybe we currently think about, yep. Right? So all of these types of impacts that companies can make that maybe we don't think about them as an impact investment, but very much are doing that kind of work. And that there's room for people to get involved, not just investors, not just founders, but people in the general community can participate on a lot of different levels.
I think, and I will say, the people that are coming at it from a more philanthropic standpoint are looking at it more as like, oh, okay, we can get some money back that we can get back out, which will increase our philanthropic spend and move things too. Very, very credible. Thought process, and I think they will eventually meet with the impact investors in the same sort of way dynamic that they look at it, but they're certainly not there together. So if you're from a nonprofit world, hey, you know, figure out how you can do a get the money back to the funders and get that recycled, which can leverage, if you can leverage that, it's a much more compelling grant.
Mike Goodrich, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate it. You got your nice shades on, and the worst days are gone. So now the band plays on. You got one life, blaze on. You got your nice shades on.